Good evening, everybody, and welcome to Carving It Up Live right here on Twitter, as well as the Carving It Up YouTube channel and the Grid Network YouTube channel. As always, I'm Bryson Carver. Very excited to be with you on this beautiful, jam-packed Wednesday night show. We got some NBA. We got some WNBA. Caitlin Clark's debut. Going to talk about that a little later on in today's show. Got some NBA playoffs, obviously. Going to talk Nikola Jokic and the incredible night he had last night against the Minnesota Timberwolves to help the Nuggets take a 3-2 lead in that series after being down 2-0 in that series to start the series. Jalen Brunson, it's what he does, man. 40-point games. That's become what he's known for at this point in the postseason, doing it with a struggling, at least physically, New York Knicks team. Detail that. And again, why the argument that he is not a superstar just doesn't hold a whole lot of weight at this point. That in about 15 minutes. Dak Prescott is in a great position. Jared Goff got paid. I did a segment on Goff by himself on Monday, but a Carving Up the Context segment regarding, hey, Goff got paid, deservedly so, by the way. Oh, Dak gonna get the bag now. And it's not just because of, oh, the market dictates Dak should. No. When you do the side-by-side Dak Goff, you might be surprised. Despite what the media may tell you. More on that in about a half hour. No Bryson's Best 10 today. Bryson's Best 10, we usually do it on Wednesday show, my top 10, whatever. I just kept looking. I'm like, I don't know if there's anything relevant right now that I could rank. Some of the funner stuff, maybe the non-sports stuff, I'll save more for the offseason when there's just not that much sports to talk about. Talk about that later in the show. Also, the reality around the Boston Celtics, that isn't necessarily a bad thing. It's just how we judge things historically when it comes to making runs in the NBA playoffs. That at the end of today's show. But first, mama, there goes that man. That's what Mark Jackson says all the time when he called games. He should still be calling games, by the way. Shout out Mark Jackson. But he would say that about Nikola Jokic if he was on the call last night. Nikola Jokic was simply sensational as the Denver Nuggets won 112-97 last night in game five to take a 3-2 lead over the Timberwolves. This comes, by the way, after trailing 2-0, losing the first two games in Denver, Colorado. Now they have a 3-2 lead, and worst case, they'll have a game seven on their home floor. But Nikola Jokic, simply sensational. How about 40 points, 13 assists, and 7 rebounds, 15 for 22 for the field, 2 for 3 from 3-point range. And by the way, it was a plus 21. In this basketball game. He was simply sensational. And, you know, you see the title of the show today. If you're watching on YouTube and on Twitter, it says a defining moment for Jokic. And what I mean by that is this. We knew he was great. If you didn't know Nikola Jokic was great, you simply have not been watching. If you didn't know he was a championship caliber player, well, you didn't watch last year. If you were like myself and were very, very, very admittedly late to the party on, yeah, this guy's one of the greatest basketball players absolutely who ever lived. We can talk about his standing historically. I want to save that more if the Nuggets go on to win a championship and go back-to-back because I feel like it'll be a more appropriate discussion then. As of right now, let's enjoy this run that him and the Nuggets are putting together. But there was a key moment in this basketball game where, so in game four, right, Jokic plays amazing. But there's the stretch where Minnesota's down, I think, if correct me if I'm wrong, down five, I think they were, with about 30 seconds left. Denver gets a quick bucket with Michael Porter Jr. on the other end. Bad pass down. Jamal Murray catches it, swishes it from half court, and it's like the ultimate just backbreaker for the Minnesota Timberwolves. At that point, you're like, this is tied 2-2. Denver, I thought, played great in the first half. And they're only up six when Anthony Edwards, by the way, was not good at all in the first half. I'm thinking, oh, okay. Minnesota may have a real shot to win this game, have an opportunity to close it out in game six. Then they open the second half. The Timberwolves do. They're down six. Within 2 or 3 minutes, they're now up two. They go on a quick run. Denver calls timeout. And it's like, oh, okay, Minnesota's taking control. And then Nikola Jokic went ballistic in the third quarter. I've heard it described in the media today as a perfect third quarter. I don't think that's hyperbole. It was literally, not just a shooting percentage, we'll show you in just a second, it was literally a perfect third quarter in every sense of the word. Here's what Nikola Jokic did after the Timberwolves took the lead in the third quarter. How about 16 points, 3 rebounds, 4 assists? He goes 6-for-6 from the field, and he's a plus 16 in the third quarter in about 8 or 9 minutes after the Minnesota Timberwolves take the lead. In that quarter, he was nothing short of remarkable. And in this game, by the way, you heard me bring out the stat line 40, 13, and 7. Nikola Jokic is truly one of one. We know among centers, he's the greatest passing big man we've ever seen. That's undeniable. But relative to other centers in the NBA, let's throw out the stat. All graphics provided by my buddy Alfred Parso Jr. All stats provided by our friends at StatMuse. Let's look at Nikola Jokic and what he is doing or has done in the postseason that is so historic. Let's put this up here, okay? 30-10-5 in a playoff game by a center. Nikola Jokic has done that 9 times in his NBA career. Every single center in the history of the NBA since 1965 combined, 5. Kareem, Shaq, Hakeem Olajuwon, throw out any great center you want to throw out. Nikola Jokic has more 30-10-5 games than all of them put together since 1965. That's what he does. He gets his teammates involved. He scores at will. And that's also what I saw from Jokic. We view his game, accurately, I believe, as like if Magic Johnson or Chris Paul were 7 feet tall. Like, that's what they would be. Like, I mean, maybe slightly less athletic, although Jokic is not, his athleticism doesn't blow you away, but Jokic plays high minutes. He may look all, you know, he may look like he's lumbering around the floor. Dude doesn't look like he gets tired late in games. Like, his stamina, his conditioning is off the charts. But it's the fact that we look at him as, yes, he could score. He can average 25, 26 a game, but he averages 9 to 12 assists a game. Gets other guys involved. If he gets doubled, there's Jamal Murray. Oh, there's Michael Porter Jr. Hey, Aaron Gordon's going to get open. He's going to miss 1 shot total in game 4. Hey, there's KCP over here. Christian Brown over there. Plenty of options. And the Nuggets have very, very perfectly constructed the roster around Jokic. But this game, it's almost like, I don't want to say he took it personally, but, you know, people have been crushing Rudy Gobert today. And listen, I don't think he needs to be crushed. I just think he needs to be accurately represented when it comes to his playoff performance. More on Gobert in just a second when you talk about his regular season in the playoffs. But Nikola Jokic, again, I don't know what it was. I don't know if it was people like myself who was like, after the Nuggets went down 2-0, Jokic, in my mind, rightfully won his 3rd MVP this year. I believe he was the MVP this season. But I'm like, okay, let's see what you got. Because the last 2 times you were named MVP, you and your team absolutely flamed out in the playoffs. Got swept by the Suns in 2021 in the 2nd round. Got gentlemen swept by my Warriors in the 1st round in 2022. If you go on 5 or a lopsided 6 games in Minnesota, it's not going to damage your legacy, but it's not great for your legacy, and it would be one of the worst title defenses historically in the 21st century that we've seen. Ever since Jokic has been absolutely phenomenal. You saw the stat line there. You saw what he's done historically. And again, constantly, night in and night out, particularly last night, is just going at Rudy Gobert. Going at him. And there's a story, I think I heard Rachel Nichols tell today on FS1, where she was talking about how there was a game, either this year, last year, something like that, where the Nuggets were playing the Timberwolves. And Rudy Gobert is guarding Nikola Jokic. And at one point in the game, Rudy, a 4-time defensive player of the year, not sure that happened, neither here nor there, he's guarding Nikola Jokic. A help defender comes to double Jokic. And Rudy waves him off like, nah, man, I got him. And Jokic, who, let's be honest, is not exactly known to be Draymond Green when it comes to trash talk, turns to Rudy and a dead ball and says, brother, I have 47. Well, last night, he had 40, obviously, as we saw. And again, Rudy Gobert, we could show you stat line. We did this on Monday's show. I don't want to beat a dead horse because I've been riding this from the beginning. But Rudy Gobert, defensive rating since 2016-17, which is the first year he made the playoffs. From 17 to 24, you see it's like, it goes no higher than 109.5, which is kind of as high in 2023. But generally, it ranges between 99 and 104 in the regular season in terms of his defensive rating. In the playoffs, it obviously goes up. And as we all know, you don't want your defensive rating to go up in the postseason. It means you are getting torched to a certain degree, right? And you see Rudy Gobert across the board. He's worse literally every single year in the postseason relative to what he was in the regular season as it pertains to defensive rating. But then again, I heard he was a 4-time defensive player of the year. I'm not going to crush Rudy for not stopping Jokic, because guess who else couldn't stop Jokic? AD. You know who else can't stop Jokic? Everybody. Nobody can stop the guy. So I'm not going to crush him for that. I am going to be hard on the media for giving this guy 4 defensive player of the year awards. But other than that, just a This was the first time, we knew Jokic was great. This was the first time I've seen Nikola Jokic say, I'm going to put the team on my back. Jamal may not have it in this series, or really hasn't had it for a while now, for weeks now in the postseason. Michael Porter Jr. isn't as good in this series as he was in the Lakers series. Aaron Gordon has been. The hell with this. Minnesota's up two. Yeah, we're going to go into the fourth quarter up 14. Absolutely took the game over. Again, went 6 for 6 the field, 16 points. I believe it was 3 assists, 4 rebounds, something like that. The guy was absolutely phenomenal, and the Denver Nuggets take a 3-2 lead. I picked Denver in 6. I feel great about that prediction today. And as I said on Monday's show, don't doubt champions. When champions face the tiniest little bit of adversity, can we not panic? When the Chiefs, they're going to be fine. They got Mahomes, they got Reed, they got Kelsey, they got great defense. They're going to be fine. Oh, the Warriors are down 2-1. They're going to be fine. They got prime Steph Curry, Steve Kerr, Draymond. They're going to be fine. Nuggets, we're going to be fine. That's why I stuck with my pick this series. It was the first time, and Nuggets fans, correct me if I'm wrong on this, but where it looks a little dicey, and Jokic says, no. This is not on my watch. We've seen great players do this. We've seen LeBron do it. Saw MJ do it. More recently, we've seen Giannis do it before. We've seen him do it before. We've seen Steph do it on countless occasions. Like, no, we are not losing tonight. And that's what Jokic did in the third quarter, which led, of course, to his 40-13-7 game. Shout out to the Joker and shout out to the defending champion, Denver Nuggets. Let's not doubt champions from here on out, y'all. It's never a good idea. My man Parnell's in the comments. What's up, Parnell? He says, what do you think about what Lil Wayne, shout out to Lil Wayne, shout out to Weezy, said about Jokic, about being a YMCA player? Is Jokic the most disrespected player in the NBA? Well, I'll put it this way. So, and I also saw Lil Wayne's comment. Here's the thing. So, a lot of the thing with Jokic, and at least this is how I read Wayne's comment, it's a lot about preference. I mean, let's be honest, Jokic does not play an aesthetically pleasing brand of basketball, and that's putting it mildly. Like, it's kind of like Tim Duncan. Tim Duncan's game, there was not a... They literally called him the big fundamental. Like, there was nothing exciting about Tim Duncan's game. He's the greatest. He's still the greatest power forward ever. Absolutely one of the 10 greatest players of all time. As far as this disrespected player part, going back and looking, guys, full disclosure, at my own takes, from 21 and 22 when he won back-to-back MVPs, and I was like, this is crazy town. He's great. He's a top 10 player. This is nuts. And in 2023, when he put together that run, he proved me straight up dead wrong about how great he is as a postseason player and as a regular season. I know he agreed he was in the regular season. So it's a matter of preference. And by the way, one more thing. It should be noted that Jokic is... I think if he wins a championship this year, I still can't put him in the top 10 quite yet, but he's at least knocking on the door, top 10 players of all time. But when you compare him to other great players at his position, let's do this. I've grown to accustomed to enjoying blind resumes. Can we put this up? The first 7 seasons, here you go. Putting Jokic's first 7 playoff runs in perspective. So you see Jokic on the left, you see mystery player on the right? Jokic has more points, more rebounds, over double the assists, and shoots a little less percentage from the field. But again, that's going to make more sense when you see who this player is, okay? So Jokic across the board is better than this guy outside of field goal percentage, which Jokic still shoots 53% to this guy's 55.7% in their first 7 postseasons. Can we show who that player is? Big Diesel himself, Shaquille O'Neal. Same points per game, about, right? Same points per game, or over, Jokic averages more points, more rebounds, double the assist. He doesn't shoot quite the same percentage as Shaq from the field, but again, Jokic shoots a lot of threes. And again, both players have a championship, have a finals MVP in their first 7 postseasons. Here's the thing. By the end of this postseason, by the end of 7 postseasons for Jokic, he could have 2 championships and 2 finals MVPs. I'm not saying he's like threatening Shaq, he's going to pass Shaq with a championship, but when you talk about the rate, when you talk about the pace, this is what I talk about with Mahomes. Like, when you look at the pace of Mahomes compared to even the pace of Brady, it's like, oh yeah, if he continues this, because I don't think that's realistic. I don't want to doubt Mahomes. If he continues to, something along this line, he's going to pass Tom. It's kind of the same with Jokic. So It's incredible what the guy's doing. Parnell, if Jokic wins another ring, would you argue he's a top five big man? Okay, well, let's see. I actually have a list. Thank you for bringing that up, Parnell, and I'll keep your comment up here because I do deep in my notes and I can search it super fast. Have my top players of all time. Do we have it? Should have it. Okay. So this is last year. This is for the record. I have not updated this list. This is from last year. I had Jokic. Where did I have him? I had him 22nd over Isaiah Thomas and below Dwayne Wade. Now, obviously, he's moved up significantly with an MVP and another great postseason run. So my top five big men, Kareem, I think it's undeniable. I don't know how you can argue Kareem isn't the greatest center ever. I don't think you can. To me, Kareem's the third best player ever. Six championships, six MVPs. Like, Jordan's the GOAT, which I think LeBron's the GOAT. Different story for another day. We can argue another day. Kareem Abdul-Jabbar, as many MVPs, more MVPs than Michael, as many championships, and longer and better longevity. I think Jordan's better, but it's a reasonable discussion. Kareem number one, Shaq number two, Russell three, Wilt four, Hakeem five, and then after that, I have Moses Malone. He probably passed Moses Malone, to be honest. He's certainly, yeah. So I would say right now, Parnell, it's certainly a discussion, Hakeem with Jokic. It's absolutely a discussion. And people forget how, like, the thing with Hakeem was he was a great offensive player. The guy might be the greatest defensive player who ever lived. Like, that does add on to your legacy as well. But it's a discussion. Last year's postseason run, and I did a segment on this last year when the Nuggets won the championship. If you look at Jokic's statistical output compared to other finals MVPs in the entirety of their run, it's one of the five greatest individual runs ever. Just statistically, again, no context, just the stats. If he does that again and faces Boston, who, no disrespect to Miami last year, but Boston's certainly more talented than the Heat were a year ago, I'm telling you, it's a legitimate discussion. Jokic and Hakeem. It is. I mean, I think Moses Malone is the most underrated player in NBA history. The man has three MVPs, okay? I mean, we could show you the list of guys who have three MVPs in NBA history. I kept this from last week. So, three MVPs, Moses, Bird, Magic, Jokic. Four MVPs, Wilt, LeBron. Five, Bill Russell, Michael Jordan, and six, Kareem sits there by himself at the top. And I think Moses Malone is the most underrated player of all time, but I think I would put Jokic ahead of him if they won a championship, if I haven't done that already. Yeah, I'll probably do like a Bryson's best 10 centers of all time if the Nuggets win the championship, because he will certainly move up. There's no question about that. All right, moving on to the Knicks last night. And again, the Knicks aren't champions necessarily, or not necessarily. They're not defending champions, of course. They haven't won a championship since the early 70s. But it goes back to what I'm saying. We live in a very... instant reaction. What just happened? Microwave. We like to microwave things rather than letting them bake, letting them cook, giving them time, right? The best meals take time to make. Nothing against microwave meals. I eat plenty of those. I'm a college kid. But, you know, when you get a nice home-cooked meal, it's different because it takes more time. It takes more effort. It takes more resources, right? We live in an instant society, instantaneous reaction society. And when the Knicks got pummeled in game four against the Pacers. It's like, oh, the Knicks are going to collapse. They're going to lose a 2-0 lead, get beaten six. I'm like, guys, slow down. They have the best player in the series, Jalen Brunson. They have the home court advantage, and we know. And I said this after game four, where when you are tired, which the Knicks were clearly gassed in game four against Indiana, just spent, because Thibodeau plays in too many minutes. A home crowd like MSG can insert a level of adrenaline into you that can carry you to the finish line. And I didn't see a 30-point blowout coming last night, but what I did see coming, what I've seen, let's see, all regular season long, is that Indiana's one of the worst teams in the NBA in terms of just pure defense. 24th in the NBA in terms of defensive rating, third worst team in the playoffs in terms of defensive rating. They're not good. They're not good on that end. They can't guard anybody. But I don't want to talk about Indiana today. I picked Knicks in six. It rhymes. I thought the matchup dictated, my prediction in terms of it favoring the Knicks in many respects, in large part because the Pacers are so atrocious on the defensive end. I'm gonna stick with my pick and say they wrap it up in six in Indiana, which would be Friday night. And then if they don't win that, I think I absolutely pick them to win game seven at MSG, but I'm going to stick with my pick and say they win game six to close out the series on Friday to play the Celtics, who are going to beat the Cavs tonight. But I want to talk about Jalen Brunson, though, individually, because what Jalen Brunson is doing is he's putting together one of the more impressive individual runs we've seen in the postseason. And we could show you this stat. Again, all graphics provided by my man Alfred. Show the stat right here. Okay, Jalen Brunson, right? Okay, this is a list. Players with 50 40-point games in a single postseason run. Some of those names you may be vaguely familiar with. Jordan, Hakeem, Shaq, AI, LeBron, and Brunson. Brunson's part of that class. Five 40-point games in a single postseason run, he is doing that. Right now, by the way, Jalen's averaging about 34 points a game, about 7.5 assists or so. Shooting percentages aren't great, but for the record, in his defense, he's kind of having to be a volume shooter because he can't rely on a whole lot of other guys. And I think at this point, the argument against Jalen Brunson being a superstar is starting to fall on deaf ears, I think. I think it's as time goes on. And listen, going into the playoffs, I love Brunson. But if you asked me before game one against the Sixers, hey, is he a superstar? I'd have been like, well, I mean, you can make a case, but I not yet. Well, yeah, I think he has to be now. Because it's not just the numbers. We've seen guys Russell Westbrook's put up great playoff numbers, not shooting percentages, but the triple doubles and all that, but the impact was almost non-existent. What Jalen Brunson is doing, and listen, I get the opponents are, the East is terrible. Okay, the Sixers were led by the second biggest playoff choker currently playing in the NBA to James Harden, and the Pacers suck on defense. That said, who's the second best player in the Knicks? Josh Hart? Dante DiVincenzo? Nothing against those guys, but they are role players. Like starters, but they are role players. And Jalen Brunson is about to take them with one more win to the conference finals, to within the final four of the NBA. Again, context is necessary. Carving up the context in 8 minutes. Context is necessary. The East is awful. Obviously, I take all four teams in the West over everybody except for Boston. I would take Denver over Boston. I'm sorry. I'd take the Mavs over Boston. I'd take the Thunder over Boston. And you could maybe convince me to take the Timberwolves over the Celtics. I'd probably roll with the Celtics, but you could convince me in all likelihood to pick the Timberwolves over the Boston Celtics. The East is weak. But this run that Jalen Brunson is putting together is indicative of that, of what a superstar would do. Tell me, James Harden ever done anything like this? James Harden had end of his prime Dwight Howard, end of his prime Chris Paul, he had Russ, he had Kevin Durant, he had Kyrie Irving, he had Joel Embiid, he had Paul George. Nothing close to this. Joel Embiid had Ben Simmons before he forgot how to play basketball. You know, he had Tyrese Maxey this year, and nothing even near this. Well, he was hurt. Does Brunson look healthy out there? Brunson's on a bad knee. He was out there limping in the two games against the Pacers. Didn't look totally healthy last night, but still willed that team to another victory. Again, you talk about 40-point games. You talk about the overall impact, the leadership. Oh, you know, Carmelo Anthony. Listen, I became an NBA fan in 2013, right after the finals between the Heat and the Spurs. All-time great series. And that was right in the middle of Melo's time in New York. And I never at any point, listen, Melo's an all-time great scorer and is an absolute first ballot Hall of Famer. But when people are like, oh, Melo, he can lead the Knicks to a championship if you put the pieces around him. He scores and stuff. That's basically it. He doesn't get teammates involved. He plays no defense. Even the one teammate who did seem to be on the come up briefly, obviously, Lynn Sanity, he was like, no. Just kind of extended his arms. Didn't love that Lynn Sanity stuff. Jalen Brunson says, hey, Dante DiVincenzo, I'm going to give you an open shot. Josh Hart, you do the same for you. That's the identity of the New York Knicks. That's what they're about. That's what they do. Now, is it sustainable? No, because A, they're too beat up, and B, they play too many minutes. It's probably why they're beat up, is because they played too many minutes. OG's hurt. Bogdanovich is hurt. Julius Randle's hurt. I mean, they are decimated right now. I mean, Miles McBride and, these guys are, Alec Burks are, Precious Achiuwa are important players in a rotation that's about to get to a conference finals. And listen, it's not, I checked the numbers today. It's not equivalent what Jalen Brunson is doing to what LeBron did in 2018, where the opponents the Cavs faced weren't that good, but the Cavs were probably worse outside of LeBron, of course. But I mean, you look at that 2018 Cavs roster, Kevin Love at his prime, and then it's George Hill, J.R. Smith, a young Jordan Clarkson, Tristan Thompson. I mean, the roster was straight up garbage. Garbage. That's why they got swept by Golden State in the NBA Finals. But LeBron was able to get them there because it was an all-time great postseason run. His numbers are just stupid. Like 2K stuff. What Brunson's doing is not that. But if you think about the last 2 years, Brunson's won more playoff series than the following. Steph Curry, Kevin Durant, Joel Embiid, Giannis Antetokounmpo. I mean, these are all guys we consider bona fide MVP guys, bona fide superstars. Jalen Brunson's been more successful with, I would argue, less than all of the above. I mean, they are relying on Josh Hart to be their second best player. I like Josh Hart. I freaking love his energy, his hustle. Josh Hart would be the fourth best player on, he'd be like the fifth or sixth best player on the Boston Celtics. Honest to God. Tatum, Brown, Drew Holiday, Kristaps Porzingis, Derek White, I think is better. Be the sixth best. He'd be the sixth man on the Boston Celtics. Today, as we sit here, the Knicks are counting him. Hey, can you give us double-digit rebounds at 6'4"? Is it sustainable? Absolutely not. Boston's going to rock them because of the lack of health. And again, just the overall exhaustion of the Knicks. But the fact that Brunson is able to, and again, the series is not over. It's not over. I do think the Knicks will pull this thing out, as I thought from the beginning. But the fact that the Knicks have been able to maintain this, that Brunson has been able to sustain this, is a credit to his greatness. Because yes, he is great. He is a superstar. You're telling me there are 10 players in the NBA you would want to start your franchise with, or have, forget start your franchise with, because that would, you would take out LeBron, Steph, and KD, because you wouldn't start your franchise with those guys because they're getting up there in age, even though they're still great. You're telling me I need one playoff series for my life. Give me every current player in the NBA. You're telling me you're going to take 10 guys before you take Jalen Brunson. I have a hard time believing that. I dang sure take him over Embiid. I take him over these days. I'd probably take him over Kevin Durant. So we have to be honest about what we're seeing with Jalen Brunson this Knicks run. And it's, again, when you talk about the lack of depth, the lack of size, the exhaustion, and they're about to go to the Eastern Conference Finals because Jalen Brunson has 5 40-point games this playoffs. Again, in a single postseason run, only five other guys have done that. MJ, LeBron, Allen Iverson, and who was the other guy? Could we put a stat back up here? It's Shaquille O'Neal and Hakeem Olajuwon. That's the list he's a part of. It's incredible. It's truly, truly incredible. Oh, see, Guido's got to ruin this. Brunson is the Josh Allen of the NBA. Well, listen, he will actually surpass Josh Allen in conference finals appearances, to his credit. You know, this will be Brunson's second conference finals. Now, he was the number two in Dallas, in fairness to Luka, 2 years ago. But still, you know, it's worth having a conversation about. I'm just saying. Does he have more postseason wins? A series, obviously, relative to games in the NFL in the last 2 years. Josh won two playoff. Yeah. If the Knicks close this thing out, he'll have more playoff series wins than Josh Allen has playoff wins. Now, in fairness, Josh lost to quarterbacks that are better than him. Mahomes, obviously, and Burrow, in fairness. But, and the Knicks, the East is very, very weak. Very weak. But, yeah, by the way, that's an inside joke for those of you that don't know about the Josh Allen stuff, because Mike Guido claims, and we won't even get into it. You know, I don't even want to throw Mike to the wolves like that, because I like him too much, even though he's a Cavs fan and a Yankees fan and doesn't like Dak. Like, I don't know why I like Mike, but I like him. But, you know, Mike has talked about how Josh Allen is the NFL equivalent to Kobe Bryant. And what his argument is that essentially Kobe was at times inefficient, took bad shots. His decision-making in general was not always great. That's Josh Allen. But the talent is obvious, which he likens to Josh Allen. To me, the big area where that, forget the accomplishments, like that's stylistically, you can compare people, one who's got all the accomplishments in the world and one who doesn't, you can compare them. But the Anthony Edwards Jordan comparisons, as far as their game, those are, you can see it, it's right there. It's the expectations that are unfair for Ant. But when you talk about again, Kobe's decision-making was not always great. Matter of fact, it was poor at times. Josh Allen is WTF are you doing at times. And even still, he's not efficient as Kobe Bryant was. It was a roller coaster. I love Josh, top five quarterback, but my gosh. Woo-hoo-hoo-hoo. All over the place. I feel like Matthew McConaughey doing that. McConaughey does those videos. He makes he'll snap or he'll whistle. Yeah, I don't know. I felt like McConaughey there. All right. Anyways, this is from Shams. Mike, I hate to tell you, buddy. Caris LeVert, Jared Allen, Craig Porter, and Donovan Mitchell are all out for Game 5 against the Boston Celtics. The Celtics, is it still minus 15.5? Yes, it is. I would take that. Now, I predicted Boston to win by like 30 in Game 4 after Donovan went out. They ended up winning by 7. Cavs, to their credit, kept the game close throughout. Again, it's classic Celtics playing down to their competition, but when back against the wall, I've done the Tatum segments before. They've been pretty good over the last few years. And listen, they'll wrap this thing up tonight. I said coming in the playoffs, they won't have more than 2 losses coming in the conference finals. And that will be, looks like that'll be so. They'll go ahead and close Cleveland out tonight at home. Boston's not a good home team in the playoffs, but they're not losing to Cleveland tonight. That's not going to happen. Mavs Thunder game 5 though. It's going to be good. I picked Mavs in 7. I'm going to go Thunder win tonight and then the Mavs win the last 2. That's what I think is going to happen. Luka's going to rip the hearts of the Oklahoma City Thunder. Mike, congrats to Tim Barnard. Yes, Tim Barnard, Boston Sports Summit. I don't know if he's doing a show tonight or not. He may be here on the Grid Network. Check out his stuff. All things Celtics, Bruins, Patriots, and Red Sox, by the way, walked it off last night against the hated Tampa Bay Rays. That was fun. In extras. That was a fun game last night at Fenway. But yes, Tim Barnard is going to have the upper hand over you because the Celtics are going to knock out the Cavs. Anywho's it. Mike, I know you're going to love this segment. I'm sure the audience will as well. So, segment I do every Wednesday called Carving Up the Context. Essentially, I look at a story, trying to look deeper than what meets the eye initially and make it into a segment on this show. So I talked about Monday briefly because the news broke about an hour and a half before the show on Monday that Jared Goff had signed the $212 million 4-year extension with the Detroit Lions. And I was like, absolutely pay him. And, Hendon Hooker, my man, go Vols. He's probably going to get traded now. I want to see the kid get an opportunity elsewhere because there's a lot of things about that kid I really, really like. He's not going to be a superstar or anything, but I think he can be a starting NFL quarterback. And then the last takeaway I had was Dak Prescott is feeling good about himself. The more I looked, I think Dak's actually feeling better than I thought on Monday's show. So, as the head coach of the Colorado Buffaloes, primetime Deion Sanders says, give me my theme music. On this week's edition of Carving Up the Context, we're going to talk about Jared Goff's new contract and how it impacts Dak Prescott. So Dak and Trevor Lawrence, to me, are the two guys that we're kind of looking at this offseason like, okay, they're going to get their deal next. My guess is Trevor probably gets – I would be shocked if the Jaguars kick the can down the road and, eventually other quarterbacks get paid. We'll see what the Niners do with Brock Purdy, what the Dolphins do with Tua. We'll see. But I'm going to go and pay Trevor Lawrence while I can with the Jaguars. The smart formula is when you got your franchise quarterback, pay him as soon as you can. Don't do what the Cowboys did in 2019. Kick the can down the road when Wentz and Goff got paid. Mahomes better than everybody, of course. But, got paid in 2020, and then you kicked the can further, and then you paid him more than you probably had to in 2021 because you're bad at business. But the point is, Dak and Goff has been a discussion, I would argue, since 2017, because Dak's had one of the greatest rookie seasons of all time, and Goff couldn't have been worse. Now, in Goff's defense, of course, the Rams situation was awful. The roster was awful. The coaching was awful. Once he got Sean McVay, we were like, oh, okay, that's the Jared Goff that we thought we could potentially see as the number one overall pick out of Cal. Dak regressed a little bit in 2017. He was more reliant at that point on the run game. And then ever since 2018, they had comparable seasons. Goff was a little better in 2019. Dak was better than Goff. 2020, Dak got hurt. And then last 3 years, Goff been in Detroit, Dak in Dallas. And, I've heard this thing for years with Dak where it's like, okay, So what if the market says he's got to get paid? He's not better than X quarterback. Than this guy or that guy. Than Joe Burrow. Well, yeah, Dak's obviously not better than Joe Burrow. He's obviously not better than Josh Allen. Than some of these guys. Lamar Jackson. He's not better than Lamar Jackson. That said, and for the record, I think Goff's a top 10 quarterback. I've always been a little skeptical of him, but the last two seasons, I've really, really been impressed, especially last year with what I saw from Jared. He's not better than Dak Prescott. He's just objectively not better. We can show you. So I saw my man Colin Cowherd, who is one of my idols in the business. He's one of the best of all time, in my opinion, at what he does. He did a segment on his show yesterday where he was saying that, hey, Goff is not better than Dak. He's way better than Dak. And then he did a statistical comparison. Goff and Matthew Stafford, because the two were traded for one another and the stats are like almost identical. Record, touchdowns, turnovers, like the whole bit, completion percentage. I was like, that's interesting. Let's look at Goff versus Dak since 2021. That was Goff's first season in Detroit. That was Dak's first season off of the ankle injury. Let's look at the, is it right here? Okay, let's look at the comparison between the two. Let's see how it stacks up. Oh, Dak is way better. Oh my gosh, not even. 96 touchdowns, Dak, 78 Goff. 43 turnovers for Dak, 41 Goff. So Goff's got the advantage there. Dak's completion percentage better, 68 to 66. Dak, more yards per game, 275 to 259. Dak's pass rating is better, 101 to 96. And his record, his you know, win-loss record is significantly better. Dak's 31 and 14. Goff is 24, 23 and 1. Now, what's interesting about that is a lot of times I judge the quarterback who's better a lot of times the head-to-head. Like, you cannot make a case Lamar. I mean, you can't make a case anybody's better than Mahomes, but just follow me here. You can't make a case Lamar Jackson's better than Mahomes. He's like 1-5 against him. Can't make a case that Josh Allen's better than Mahomes. He's 0-3 in the playoffs against him. As great as Burrow is, right, he's lost. He lost his most recent game. He's 1-1 in the playoffs against Mahomes. And even in the two losses, Mahomes was awesome in the two regular season losses to the Cincinnati Bengals. What's another example? Allen has struggled against Joe Burrow, right? We've seen that before. It's the argument I made Dak over Herbert. I, by the way, love Herbert. Dak's beaten him twice in his house on game-winning drives, and I was outplayed him both times. Dak and Goff, when they play one another, and this is really where the context is going to be added even after I show you this graphic. So Dak and Goff have played each other six times. And you would think, hey, Goff's been in a different situation. Dak's had different coaches. Goff's had different coaches. They've had different weapons. Can we show you the stats here? Dak's not better than Goff. He's better than Goff by a country mile in the head-to-head. Dak, over double the touchdowns of Goff, 11 to 5. A third of the turnovers of Goff, 2 to 6. A better completion percentage, 65 to 62. More yards per game, 269 to 255. A significantly better passer rating. Think about this, head-to-head, Dak, a passer rating against Goff of 104. Goff, slightly above league average at 79. Dak has three wins. Goff has three wins. Here's the thing, though. And this is what's interesting. Dak Prescott has won three of the last four matchups. Dak Prescott has won the last two matchups in particular when Goff got Ben Johnson. See, they didn't play in 2021 when the Lions were terrible and got the second pick in the draft. No. 2022. Dallas played Detroit. That was Dak's first game back. That was Dak. Remember when Dak had the thumb injury and the Cooper Rush came in and everyone's like, oh my God, Cooper Rush. I'm like, guys, they're literally hand-holding him through this process. Well, they kind of did the same with Dak. If you look at the numbers and just watch the game, in that one, they kind of played the Cooper Rush offense in Dak's first game back, just kind of slowly working him back into the lineup. The game was right there for the taking for Jared Goff and the Lions. And he turned the ball over four times. Last year in Dallas, despite the fact that Jared Goff has the following: better play caller, better head coach, better situational football team, better offensive line, better weapons, better run game, Dak still won the game and outplayed Goff. So when we talk about the comparison, we talk about who should get paid what. Goff's going to get about, I think, $53 million a year on average in this contract, which ultimately, we know that the averages are not what really matters. It's about when, how you structure the contract, how much money you get in certain years, how much of that's a signing bonus. Like, again, the capologist would be much better than me at describing that. But one thing can't be denied. If Goff's going to get that, Dak should, and I believe will, get more. Not from Dallas, because I think deep down, Dak wants to, he's been disrespected enough time by Jerry. I mean, crap. Dak gets his contract in 2021. Jerry Jones looks that man dead in the eye. I overpaid you. What? Didn't we sign the dotted line like 30 minutes ago? Like what the heck is going on? Jerry wouldn't even let Dak have his moment at his press conference to sign his contract. He didn't believe in Dak in his rookie year when he's like, oh, we got to go to Romo. Got to go to Romo. It's like, guys, Dak's won like 9 straight games. Like, what are we doing? Dak's the guy. Love Romo. Dak's the guy. I think Dak's looking, and I said this coming into the season. I think I'm in the minority on this. I think this is the least pressure Dak Prescott's ever had in his career coming into a season, aside from his rookie year, because nobody thought he was going to do what he did in his rookie year, where, okay, CeeDee Lamb's probably going to play. The Cowboys will be stupid not to extend CeeDee Lamb. But after that, it's just guys at wide receiver. The offensive line has regressed. We just lost, one of the greatest left tackles of all time, Tyron Smith. Our running game is going to be led by Rico Dowdle and a washed Ezekiel Elliott. And our defense, last time we saw our defense, they gave up 40-plus to the Packers, the youngest playoff team in 50 years. And my head coach is on the last year of his deal, and none of us really trust the head coach. The play calling suspect. Often, especially late in games, situationally, they don't rely at all on analytics. What kind of pressure do I got? Play well, do my thing, throw my 30 touchdowns, get my 100 passer rating, and get the bag elsewhere. You know, there's a team, the Cowboys play in week 5. If you're watching on YouTube and Twitter, you can see the hat I'm wearing. If you're listening to the show, I'm wearing a Pittsburgh Steelers hat. And I have to say that Dak in Pittsburgh, tell you what, you got the running game, Najee Harris, Jalen Warren, you got George Pickens. CeeDee Lamb's awesome. It's top 5 receiver in the game, top 3 receiver in the game. But George Pickens ain't no slouch. And George Pickens doing his thing with back quarterback play. Okay, you got Pat Freiermuth. You got Roman Wilson, who you just drafted out of Michigan. You are going all in, unlike Dallas, on the offensive line with, you know, first-round picks the last Dallas has gone first-round pick, my bad. Two of the last 3 years on the offensive line, they're going out. They're address the offensive line and the defense. I don't know. Is TJ Watt, is Minkah Fitzpatrick, is Patrick Queen, has Alex Highsmith, some Joey Porter Jr. I mean, they got some dudes, and they are coached by one of the best ever, Mike Tomlin. I'm just saying it's a little more attractive than Dallas. Just a little. You know, give Jared Goff the weapons. See what he did. Got you to an NFC championship game. You give Dak weapons. I don't know. Who say he couldn't get just as far? We see the stats. We see the comparison. Despite Goff, historically, man had McVay. He had Ben Johnson. He's had Cooper Kupp. He's had Amon-Ra St. Brown. He's had Sam Laporta. He had prime Todd Gurley. He's had Dax has CeeDee Lamb. And his numbers are better. And he's won 3 of the last 4 games against Goff, despite Goff having better talent around him. Like these things. This is why I do carving up the context. This context does need to be applied to these certain situations. So, carving up the context, if Jared Goff got his money, for the record, well-deserved. Oh, Dak Prescott, he going to get the bag. He's not going to get it from Dallas because, well, it's Dallas. Who are we kidding? The Pittsburgh, the Giants, Raiders, any of those could work. This is interesting. It feels like Dak will be a LA Ram in 2025. Here, I don't know if they had the cap space to pull that off, Patrick. But, I mean, if Stafford retires after next year, which is not out of the question, I think Stafford's still amazing. But, I don't know. I mean, Dak could stay in the NFC. The Niners are going to pay Brock Purdy. The Seahawks, we'll see what they do. I think the Seahawks are quarterback away from being really, really good. The Cardinals, they're atrocious. But that's not actually a terrible prediction, Patrick. Guido, oh, for the love of God. Goff is way better at what? But what's he better at? Because again, part of what makes Mahomes so great, part of what made that run, the run's last 2 years so amazing. Yes, he has Andy Reid. Yes, he has Travis Kelce. And who else? Marquez Valdes-Scantling, he's so valuable, they let him walk to the Bills. Rashee Rice, Kadarius Toney, like, what are we doing? That's what made it so dark. That's what made Brady's run so impressive. Gronk, prime Gronk, okay, you got me. Edelman was really good, but at the end there in New England, I mean, we're talking Amendola, Chris Hogan. I mean, I hate to call it all, you know, Philip Dorsett. I won't just call out all the white guys. Pretty average to below average guys. Yeah, Brandon Cooks, great. What did Brandon Cooks have? Like, what was he in the 40-somethingth place in terms of receiving yards? Like, what do we talk about? Brandon Cooks is on his fifth team. Yeah, Jalen Tolbert. Ooh, Jalen Tolbert. That's a difference maker right there. Mike, I want Dak to be a Steeler so bad. Oh, you and me both, my man. You and me both. And part of me, see, I don't want this. I don't want pain and suffering for Cowboys fans. You know why? Because I was one. I ditched the team, well, ditched being a Cowboys fan in 2020 because of the horrendous mismanagement of the Dak Prescott contract. Like, this guy's easily and unequivocally and undeniably and undebatedly, at any metric you look at, a top 10 quarterback in the NFL. And they're like, should we? It's like, bro, who are you going to get is better? Who are you going to find? Yes, some guy in the third round? Are you going to hit in a first round pick? Fun, you haven't done that for a quarterback in 30 plus years. So, but I don't want that kind of pain and suffering for Cowboys fans because I like Cowboys fans. Like, they're tougher than me for sticking through what they've stuck through because I left. But at the same time, for the half of the fan base, I don't even know if it's half, it might be like 40%, 30%, 40%. That is just, hey, oh, Dax, what's held us back? And it's kind of the same crowd. Oh, Romo is it? Man, without Romo, you're winning 5 games a year. Without Dak, what, the Cowboys are 6-11, third in the NFC East? I mean, they're where the Giants are at. Literally, they're where the Giants are at with a better receiver. Giants have a pretty good defense. At least the Giants have a pretty good coach. I really like Dable. I tell you what. You give Dak, are you kidding me? You give Dak Tomlin those receivers and that defense, you're telling me he's not going to be awesome? Man led the league in touchdown passes without a great number two. Goff already has a great number two. His name's Jameson Williams. And he has Jahmyr Gibbs. Yeah. That's funny. You give a quarterback a running game and actual weapons, a quarterback of Goff's caliber. Oh, all of a sudden, what a shocker. He's got a 17-point lead in the NFC title game. And his defense is who blew it. Patrick, Rams are better in drafting, coaching, roster construction, and will spend the money to win now, worry about the salary cap later. And guess what, Patrick? You know what we've learned the last 2 years? The Rams coming into last season, especially given the Stafford injury, the Cup injury, Donald was on the precipice. We knew he was pretty close to retirement. We were like, okay, yep. They went all in, F them picks, got their Super Bowl, so it was a success. You can't say anything bad about the Rams. But now they're going to have to kind of, so to speak, take their medicine on this. It's like, no, we're going to ace the draft. We're going to get Puka Nacua. We're going to upgrade the defense. It's like, holy cow, they're right back in the same position. It's like, well, they lost the first round. Yeah, they lost by a point because they couldn't score in the red zone against Detroit. Like, I'm of the belief that the Rams, I think, are in a good position to make the NFC title game if they beat the Detroit Lions. And I really like the Rams coming into the season, even with the loss of Donald. But yeah, you're 100% right, Patrick. Plus, LA is a bigger market than Dallas. I don't know if that necessarily is. I mean, Dallas isn't as big. The city of Dallas is not as big of a market than LA. Only New York can compare to that. But at the same time, Dallas is the most valuable sports franchise on planet Earth. So, but again, this was salary cap. This isn't, you know, the Yankees, the Red Sox, and the Dodgers of Major League Baseball. There's no salary cap. Patrick, Dak's postseason shortcomings have been detrimental. If Dak leaves, it wouldn't hurt my feelings. I prepared a year in advance. When it happens, no angry energy for me. You're talking about to the Cowboys or to Dak? The angry energy, so to speak. Because, again, what I've said is people forget. We often in, I'm going to go here, in politics, in American history, in sports history, we so often just disregard history when it often does end up repeating itself. Matter of fact, I may have the list, actually, because I often save my notes for future reference. Okay. Anybody remember the names of the quarterbacks between Aikman and Tony Romo? And keep in mind, that was almost a decade. Quincy Carter, Anthony Wright, Ryan Leaf, Clint Storner, Chad Hutchinson, Vinny Testaverde, Drew Henson, Drew Bledsoe. Any of you guys, Bledsoe's hilarious and all, and by the way, was a really good quarterback. Obviously, for Brady, infamously replaced him. But that's the reality the Dallas Cowboys are going to be in. Well, we can draft one. Who says we can't draft one? Because you're Dallas. Just like you're Washington. Just like Washington prior to the new ownership. Oh, Kirk, I don't know about Kirk. Yeah, they shouldn't have moved on from Kirk. You want to look at the quarterbacks since Kirk Cousins? They're not very good. None of them. They're hoping Jaden Daniels. And from what I'm seeing, again, new ownership makes all the difference in the world. From what I'm seeing from Jaden Daniels, oh boy, this kid's coming. But poorly owned teams don't get franchise quarterbacks. They just don't. Houston's one of the few exceptions. I don't think Houston's well owned, but they are well managed in terms of the front office with the GM and, you know, president of football operations. But Patrick, Dak, I won't have a negative injury. I will sit and watch every fan go AWOL for Cooper Rush. I don't think they'll go to Cooper Rush. I think they'll go to Trey Lance, which to me would be the ultimate mistake if you're the Dallas Cowboys. Because I think we often forget this. That, and I, by the way, for the record, I was, and then we'll move on because I've been on the Dak topic for probably more than is necessary. I was high on Trey Lance in 2021. I said then that Trevor would be the best quarterback in that draft, and that's ended up not being that good of a draft, so it's not saying much, but Trevor's obviously exceeded everybody else in that draft. But I thought Trey Lance would have the best career because he was going to San Francisco. So, and this is not a shot at Brock Purdy. This is a little shot at Jimmy G. But if Jimmy G can get that franchise to a Super Bowl and you can't even beat out Sam Darnold in camp, if you're Trey Lance. Like, people forget accuracy, leadership, not really there. I mean, even the Dak haters will say Dak's a heck of a leader. Trey Lance, there was some stuff in San Francisco that weren't ideal. I mean, strip clubs, I mean, you know, you don't love that. Accuracy, decision-making. Every quarterback worth their salt works with Kyle Shanahan. Everyone. Garoppolo, Matt Schaub, RG3, Purdy, Matt Ryan won. Matt Ryan's a really good starter. Matt Ryan won an MVP with Kyle Shanahan. Trey Lance couldn't beat out Sam Darnold in the Shanahan offense with the Shanahan weapons. You're telling me he's going to work in Dallas? Are you freaking kidding me? You'd be much better off at least taking a chance on the guy who you don't know if he works. Now, I know Trey Lance didn't work. If Trey Lance hadn't been successful with the Jets, it'd be like, oh, okay, the Jets, it's where young quarterbacks' dreams go to die. Like, you give him a shot. Man couldn't work with Shanahan. So I think that would be a horrible, horrible decision by Dallas. I hope they do, kind of, just to see, hey, this is... My friends, this is what life after Dak is going to look like, especially with Jerry Jones running the operation. And the last two franchise guys in Dallas, they lucked into both. Romo was undrafted, Dak was a fourth rounder, and Jerry Jones infamously wanted Paxton Lynch and Connor Cook. Who I'm not sure, I know Paxton Lynch is in the league. I'm almost certain Connor Cook's not in the league anymore over Rain Dakota Prescott. So, you know, what do I know? You know what? Omar Khan. Pay Cam Hayward. This just came in from Jeremy Fowler that Cam Hayward is holding out a voluntary camp for a contract extension. Omar, you better pay my guy, okay? This guy has been an absolute rock with the Steelers organization for over a decade. Man's the reigning man of the year winner in the NFL with Dak Prescott, by the way. And you got to pay this guy. He's leadership on the defensive side of the football. You got to pay him. Come on now. All right, let's transition now to Caitlin Clark because she made her debut last night for the Indiana Fever against the Connecticut Sun, and the Fever, no surprise, because there's a reason they had the number one overall pick to get Caitlin Clark, lost the basketball game 92-71, so it wasn't particularly close. Caitlin in this game went 5 for 15 for the field, 4 for 11 from 3, 0 rebounds, 3 assists, but did score 20 points. She did go 6 for 6 from the free throw line. So... you saw at times, there was a video at halftime of the game where the Fever, how much were they down by at halftime? Double digits, something like that. Where Aaliyah Boston, who, funny enough, who played at South Carolina, Caitlin Clark eliminated and ended the college career of Aaliyah Boston in the Final Four back in 2023. They're teammates now. Aaliyah Boston was the Rookie of the Year a year ago with the Fever. Now they had Caitlin Clark, and you have to imagine it's a great draft class, but it has to be the odds-on favorite to win Rookie of the Year in the W. So again, this goes back to what I said with the Knicks today, what I said about the Nuggets on Monday's show, that anytime something goes ever so slightly awry with somebody, all of a sudden it's like this referendum on them where it's up. Yep. Told you they weren't good. Yep. Which I don't know if that's been the total reaction to Caitlin, but it's been like, eek, yikes, not a great rookie debut, Caitlin. I mean, she did score 20. The Vegas over-under was 20 and a half. I mean, she came a half point short of that. Now, was she efficient? No. She was 5 for 15 from the field and 4 for 11 from 3. She only had 3 assists. I predicted Caitlin this year would average 19.6 assists and shoot around like 40, a little mid to low 40s from 3. From the field, and about 38% from three-point range. That was my prediction for Caitlin on Monday's show going into her rookie year. So I do think she exceeded the points per game. You'd like her to be a little bit more efficient. But we've seen rookie debuts in the past. My guy Colin Cowherd brought up today, Victor Wembanyama had 15 points at 7'5" tall as the greatest prospect arguably in NBA history. Like, it takes, and we saw Wemby at the end of the year where it's like, oh my God, this guy, oh my God. Now that's the guy we thought we were getting in San Antonio. By the end of the season, by September, and listen, I don't think the Indiana Fever are going to make this long postseason run because, again, even with Aliyah Boston, there's a reason they got the number one overall pick to get Caitlin Clark. It's going to be a slow build. It's going to be a process. It's going to be, but once they eventually get to that, yeah, Caitlin's going to be a superstar. Thing is, her debut's tomorrow. Her home debut, rather, is tomorrow. Who do they play? They play the Liberty. Now, the Liberty made the WNBA Finals, lost to the back-to-back champ Aces. The Sun, Connecticut Sun, made the WNBA Semifinals. They were essentially in the Final Four of the WNBA playoffs a year ago. So, again, it's no surprise they won. They were supposed to win. They were favored to win. And so, Caitlin being inefficient. When you have this WNBA debut, you have the weight of the world on your shoulders carrying women's basketball. You're going to come out a little rusty. Again, the competition is different. If you expected Caitlin to just step on a WNBA floor and drop 30, that was unrealistic. She'll have 30-point games this season, I believe. She'll get more comfortable. She'll understand the physicality. She'll adjust to it like all great prospects do. And she'll be the Caitlin Clark that we expect her to be at the next level. So I don't think one game is up there. Yeah, it's just not going to live up to the expectations of that, Caitlin. She'll be fine. She calmed down the second half. There was a point in the fourth quarter where she scored the last 8 points for the Indiana Fever. Like, just give her time. She will develop. She'll get better. I think her and Aliyah Boston, as time goes on, are going to be an absolutely lethal combo in the WNBA, kind of like Kelsey Plum and Asia Wilson with the Vegas Aces. I think it's going to be that good. And Brianna Stewart, Sabrina Nescu with the New York Liberty. I think this is going to be a very special basketball team for years to come, just not this year. The team's not going to be good. Caitlin will be good, bordering on really good, I think. I said 19 points, 9 assists on about 44-ish% from the field, 38% from three-point range is what I expected from Caitlin. She'll bump those averages up in terms of her shooting percentage from what we saw from her last night. And I wouldn't see this as it's a referendum on what she's going to be. Like, just give it time, let it develop, let her develop, let the team grow around her, let her grow around the team. And that's not every LeBron's rookie debut is not normal. Okay, it's not. Well, didn't LeBron drop like 25-8 or something, 25-7 against the Sacramento Kings back in 03? Like, that's not normal. And by the way, LeBron came in the NBA as an 18-year-old looking like a grown man physically. Like, we talk about 18-year-olds coming to the NBA and even, women of Caitlin's age coming to the WNBA where it's like, okay, like, they need to kind of grow into, into their frame. LeBron came in, it's like, my gosh, he looks like he's 30 years old physically. He looks like a football player. That's not normal. So Caitlin last night, 20 points, 5 for 15, that's about what we expected. She calmed down in the second half, played a little better, played decent in the fourth quarter when the game is out of reach. She'll be fine. I'm not exactly worried that the Fever wasted their draft pick last month. Not worried about that at all. But I'll tell you again, my guy Barry Grant Jr., who won 8 o'clock spot last night, 8 o'clock spot every Tuesday night at 8 p.m. Eastern on the Grid Network's YouTube channel and Twitter account. I love what he said at the end, like, women's basketball's on the come up. So you might as well get on the train now, support it now. Give it an opportunity to grow and to build, because the fact of the matter is, and this is what I respect a lot, and I've been, for the last couple of years, I've really been on Kathy Engelbert talking about how great of a commissioner she is in terms of the growth of the league, where if you compare their growth to Major League Baseball's growth, WNBA is growing more. It obviously does not have the fan base or even close to it what Major League Baseball has, but Rob Manfred hasn't run the sport into the ground. But God, I mean, when we get to the summer, post-NBA finals, like sandwiched between the finals and the start of the NFL season, and we know the NFL dominates television, what are the summer topics going to be? NBA draft, NBA free agency, NFL training camp, Caitlin Clark, Olympics. Those five topics alone will be more relevant than Major League Baseball. And it's not because baseball is a talent problem. Have you seen Shohei Ohtani? Have you seen, Juan Soto with the Yankees? Like, have you seen Rafi Devers with the Red Sox? Like, we see pretty good players in Major League Baseball, more so now than ever, just like the NBA, just like the NFL, just like any sport worth their salt. But again, the WNBA has put the time, it's put the resources into growing its sport. And when you have Caitlin come in, when you have again, Cameron Brink, Angel Reese, these really, really talented women, Cardoso, the woman from South Carolina, really talented players coming in, and they have Paige Beckers, who, cross my fingers, is going to get drafted by, first time I say this on the show, the Golden State Valkyries. Now, that is an awesome name. I'm not going to lie to you. The Golden State Valkyries, which was announced as the team name of the new Golden State WNBA franchise that's coming next season, next WNBA season. That is, if Paige goes there, I'm a Golden State WNBA fan. I'm obviously a Golden State NBA fan, of course, but I'm going to have to be a Valkyries fan. I'm not going to, the uniforms, not, I don't think they have uniforms yet, but the logo, the name, and then Juju, by the way, Juju Watkins coming in 2026. So the league is growing, women's basketball is growing. So get on the train now, because if you don't, you're bandwagon. Yeah, Patrick, can't forget about Angel Reese, my Vegas Aces. Oh, you're Vegas. I did not know you were an Aces fan. Are on a mission to three-peat. Asia Wilson will win MVP this year. There's no way she doesn't. Listen, it's one thing for her not to win MVP last year. With all due respect to Breanna Stewart, I do think Asia Wilson should have won it. For her to finish third was, I'm almost certain she meant finish third. I was like, the heck is, what is up with the voters this year? They got something against Asia Wilson? Dang. But listen, I'm a Tennessee guy. I don't like South Carolina, but dang, that was, come on now. By the way, NFL schedule releases in less than an hour, and I am a nerd, straight up nerd for the NFL schedule release. I did see that my Steelers were playing the Chiefs on Christmas on Netflix. Let's go. That is going to be fun. Anywho's it though, last topic. Look, we got a comment here from Patrick. Jackie Young is from my hometown. I've been following the team for a while. Oh, that's cool. Yeah, Jackie Young's a heck of a player for the Aces. So that's kudos to her. So last topic, let's talk about the Boston Celtics. So they're going to tip off in a matter of minutes against the Cleveland Cavaliers. Go ahead and knock out Cleveland. That's going to be enjoyable. As a Warriors fan, I still hold hard resentment toward the Cleveland Cavaliers from those finals appearances or finals matchups in the mid-2010s. I hate Cleveland. Ooh, all Cleveland sports. Ugh, nah. So they're going to get knocked out in five. They're missing half their roster. Boston's only guy Boston's missing is Porzingis. They're at home. But now Boston's not very good at home in the playoffs relative to what they are on the road, but they're 15.5-point favorites. They'll take care of business and close the series out. So, listen, the East is one of the weakest conferences. This year, the 2024 NBA Eastern Conference is one of the weakest conferences I've seen in professional sports. Take out college sports in some time. Like, it is. The Knicks are missing half their roster. Josh Hart's their second best player. Listen, Brunson's awesome. Like, he's a superstar. I talked about that earlier in the show. And they're going to make the conference finals. They're going to be four wins away from the NBA's biggest stage. Here's the thing with Boston that this could almost be a carving up the context segment here. Nuance does matter. Context does matter. That if the Boston Celtics get to the NBA finals, which I predicted they would before the season, I certainly believe they will now. Is anybody just stunned? Is anybody like, oh my gosh, Boston got to the fight? No. If they lose the finals, like, yeah, they failed. They messed up because of the road to get there. If Denver lose the, forget Denver's, okay, how about this? If the Mavericks, who I think are the second best team in the West, I think they're going to lose to OKC tonight, win the last two and win in seven. Let's say the Mavericks get to the NBA Finals. They've never won before. Luka's never won before. Luka's never been to a Finals before, which Tatum has. and the Celtics beat the Mavericks? Are we going to be like, ugh, failed run for Dallas? I mean, the players will be disappointed. The organization, the fans, are like, dang, we got so close, we couldn't pull through. Yeah, but it's also, oh my God, you see their run? They had to get through the, I know it's the Clippers, but they had to get through Paul George and the Clippers. They had to get through Shea and the Thunder and Jokic or Ant in the conference finals. And listen, that was a hard run. It reminds me a little bit of my 2015 Golden State Warriors. First round, you play Anthony Davis and a bunch of guys, and Drew Holiday was injured that series with the New Orleans Pelicans. Okay, that was the Warriors were never losing that series. They swept them. Then they play the Grizzlies in the second round. Now, that was the grit and grind Grizzlies, the best version of the Grizzlies with Conley, Gasol, Randolph, Tony Allen, one of the greatest guard defenders ever, by the way. But Conley was injured. Steph and the Warriors took over that series in games 4, 5, and 6. But Warriors were certainly the superior team in that series. Then they play the Rockets. Harden was second for MVP, but it is playoff Harden, and Dwight Howard struggled, and the whole Houston team struggled. Warriors won that series easily. So it was kind of like, you avoided San Antonio, you avoided the Lob City Clippers, like you kind of got about as easy of a road to the finals as you could have. You better finish the job. They faced the Cavs. Well, Kyrie's out, Love's out, still got the ring. But my thing is, I don't put asterisks next to championships. That is, unless you're the 2017 Astros and you literally cheated your way to a title, I do not put asterisks next to championships of any sort, of any kind, because you, every team in every way, shape, and form, at least in one way, gets lucky. Health. But if you don't win the finals, it's like, okay, they had about as easy of a run as they could have possibly gotten. Denver had to go through the Lakers, LeBron and AD. They had to go through the Timberwolves and Edwards and the great defense of Minnesota. Then they had to go through either Shea or Luka. If they lose, well, okay, it was a hard run to get there. Boston, you get the Heat without Jimmy Butler. You get the Cavs without Donovan Mitchell for the last two games and a bunch of Cavs players in game 5. And then you get the beat-up Knicks or the awful defensive team, which is called the Indiana Pacers. It's like, yeah, if you don't get to the finals, it is a disaster for Boston. It won't be a disaster if they lose the finals, but it is it's about the best chance you could have gotten. Now, if they win the championship, I don't want to hear the, oh, it was an easy run. They won the championship. They beat Denver, or they beat Minnesota, OKC, or Dallas. They beat a darn good team in the finals. Either way, whoever they face, Tatum deserves credit. Missoula, who I've been very critical of, will need some love and respect. Jaylen Brown, Drew Holiday will have a second ring. Like, we'll need to give Boston the respect. I don't want to hear about the easy run. We've seen teams have easy runs end up winning the championship. They got the championship. We asked them to do that. They did it. But if they lose the finals, again, it won't be a disaster. If they lose the conference finals to the beat-up Knicks or the Pacers, it's like, oh my gosh, you gotta be kidding me. But it is you won't get a better chance in this year. You had the best record in the league. Tatum was great. Jaylen Brown was an all-star. You got Drew Holiday. We'll see if Porzingis comes back, but you got Porzingis, and Derek White has had a great year for Boston. The bench has been serviceable, and you weren't able to finish the job. So I think there's no more pressure on any team in the playoffs than the Boston Celtics, the teams that are left at least, because at Denver, if they don't go back-to-back, okay, the team hasn't gone back-to-back since the Steph KD Warriors. Okay, it's hard to do. If the Thunder don't win it, they're kids. They're going to be back. Dallas, okay, you know, that's another run. You know, Luka Doncic, I think, is going to win this series. The Mavs are going to win this series, in my estimation. And that'll be another conference finals or potentially a finals. The Timberwolves, well, Ant's 22. Like, he's going to have plenty of time to go to more finals, potentially. The Knicks, there's no pressure. The Knicks are not winning the finals. Not getting to the finals, at least. The Pacers not going to the finals. The Cavs, obviously, are done. So, you win the title. I don't want to hear the disrespect for Boston. They won the title. They did what we asked them to do. But if they lose with the easiest run of the finals, maybe in history, there's going to be backlash, and rightfully so. So, that's my take. Nuanced take on the Boston Celtics. There you go. So, yeah, Cavs and Boston just tipped off. It's very early in the game. It's like 6-3 Boston. They'll roll. By the way, NFL schedule comes out tonight. I'll give reaction to that on Friday's show, which will not, it may be live, may not be live. I got to check and see. Again, I'll keep you on the loop about that. But Yeah, there you go. That's all the time we have for today's show. Appreciate everybody stopping by. As always, be sure to catch Carving It Up Live on Friday, presumably at 6 p.m. Eastern, 3 p.m. Pacific time, right here on Twitter, as well as the Carving It Up YouTube channel and the Grid Network YouTube channel. Of course, be sure to like, share, comment, and please take 2 seconds out of your day. Hit that big red subscribe button down there. It helps the channel grow exponentially. We are trying to get to 1,000 subscribers. We are 12 away, ladies and gentlemen, 12 subs away from 1K. I didn't mean for that to rhyme, but it just did. 12 subs away from 1K. So if you have subscribed, thank you. Thank you so much. Please tell everybody you know, your friends, your family, everybody but your sleeping cat. Do not tell your cat about Carving It Up while they're sleeping. They can't subscribe to the show anyway, so it doesn't matter. But tell everybody you know about the show. If you have not subscribed, hey, just takes a couple seconds. If you're here on YouTube, hit that big red subscribe button down there, and boom, you're part of the Carving It Up family. Just as importantly, be sure to go subscribe to the Grid Network. That is GRYD, the Grid Podcast Network, right here on YouTube, as well as any and everywhere you get your favorite podcasts, be it Apple Podcasts, Spotify, iHeartRadio, Google Podcasts, any and everywhere that you get your favorite podcasts. We dare to be different at the Grid Network. Check out our stuff on the website, on the YouTube channel, all podcast platforms. Definitely check 8 o'clock spot. We got some, you know, had a fun show last night. Carving Up, of course, but check out our other amazing content creators on the Grid Network. See you on Friday. I'll keep you on the loop for what time the show's going to be. And then we'll do some NBA stuff, NFL schedule. Can't wait. Caitlin Clark's home debut. Can't wait. It's going to be a fun one. See you then. Stay safe out there. Please also, almost forgot, please be sure to take care of your physical as well as your mental health. And please, please, please be sure to contact your local state representatives and senators to demand change for gun violence in America. Doesn't matter where you lean, right, left, center. It's an issue that impacts every single one of us as American citizens. And no matter what anybody on either side of the aisle tries to gaslight you on, oh, this isn't really that much of a problem, or oh, there's only one solution to the problem, both are nonsense. There's a number of solutions to this massive problem. And let's do our duty as American citizens to do what we can to address it, because it needs to be. All right. See you on Friday. Caitlin Clark home debut, NBA playoffs. Nuggets will probably close out the Timberwolves by then. Be fun to talk about that. See you then. God bless y'all. Peace out. Steelers and Chiefs and week in Christmas. I love it. Happy holidays. Thanks so much for watching the show on YouTube, and be sure to go click that big red subscribe button and check out the other clips and full shows from Carving It Up Live, as well as our other incredible content creators here on the Grid Network.